Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin, and welcome to part two of our conversation with Dr. Allison Wood Brooks. If you caught episode 275, you'll remember we introduced Dr. Brooks, Harvard professor, behavioral scientist, and the author of Talk, The Science of Conversation and the Art of Being Ourselves. We explored the power of asking more and better questions. We got to know a little bit about Dr. Brooks herself. We broke down the four key types of questions. We also uncovered why the follow-up questions are the superheroes of dialogue. We also talked about boomer asking, a common conversational misstep. And we explored why there's no such thing as a sensitive question, only a sensitive context. And yes, there was more. Now, if you haven't had a chance to listen to part one, I encourage you to check it out first. But if you're all caught up, sit back, relax, and enjoy part two. You're obviously the master of questions because I appreciate the fact that you took the question that I asked and you reframed the wrong or bad questions to sensitive, difficult, or our personal questions, because I think many of us, except for reporters who want to know the goods, we're brought up with the idea that these types of questions are taboo and they're crossing the line or questions that people wouldn't want to answer. But obviously you're saying that your research is finding that isn't in fact the case.
That's right. Yeah.
I want to make reference to the section of your book, the A from Talk, and the A is for asking. And I love that it opens up with your analysis of a series of interviews between Carrie Fisher. Of course, many of us know her as Princess Leia, the daughter of Debbie Reynolds. And sadly, she's passed away. And the interviewer, Terry Gross, from the Fresh Air series on NPR, transpired over a period of about three decades. Now, I found it fascinating not only how the relationship between the two evolved, but also how the questions also evolved. So I'm curious as to why did you pick that particular story? And can you maybe share a little bit more? I think you've already touched on it a bit, but share a little bit more about the correlation between questions and relationships.
Absolutely. Every relationship is just a repeated sequence of conversations over time. And that was true for Terry Gross and Carrie Fisher as well. Terry Gross interviewed Carrie Fisher three times on Fresh Air over the span of, I think, maybe 30 years, somewhere around that. And so we as listeners can watch the trajectory of their relationship sort of unfold in this public forum, which is really special. And I'm sure you get to do that too with some repeat guests on your podcast. And we all get to experience that in our lives with repeated conversations with people over time. And what you can hear in these three interviews between Terry Gross and Carrie Fisher, first of all, you can very clearly see why Terry Gross is regarded as such an amazing interviewer. She is an incredible question asker. She very famously does a lot of preparation. She always reads people's books and watches their movies and, you know, watches all the, she's just an incredible person of prep. But then in the moment, once she's in the conversation, she also is very clearly working hard to make her conversation partner feel heard, feel safe, feel like she's not coming from a place of negative judgment or exploitation, which would be, it would be easy for someone to feel that way on a show like Fresh Air. This is a huge sort of syndicated radio program turned podcast. There are so many listeners. And people go on there and share very personal things about their work and about their lives, particularly Carrie Fisher, who has gone through all kinds of crazy things, drug addiction, rehab, losing her parents, affairs with Harrison Ford. You know, like all of us, she accumulated a lot of drama in her life. And it's clear that Terry Gross makes Carrie feel quite comfortable sharing these things, even in a very public conversation, because of the way that she affirms her conversation partners and how she listens and follows up on the things that seem most interesting. She really chases the energy once she's in the conversation. Terry Gross wrote a book called All I Did Was Ask. So I suspect that she has an obsession with question asking, just like you and I do, Greg.
That's fascinating. A little bit of the geek side to me. I'm curious, in what ways can we use some of your techniques or some of the research from your book to get better responses from AI?
Ooh, I'm thinking about a couple things, a lot of things related to AI. One is that AI is a really helpful companion for topic prep. So when you, before you enter into a conversation with someone, whether it's for a work engagement or with someone that you're close to, you can use it as a creativity companion, right? Say, okay, I'm going to talk to Greg, the gadget guy. What would he like to talk about with someone like me? And it'll give you all kinds of ideas, right? It's this creativity task that we all have to do. Usually we just do it on the fly during a conversation, but you can offload some of that work to the time before the conversation begins, and then you can use AI to help you do the brainstorming task. My sister recently asked AI about, you know, having conversations with our parents. So she said, okay, what would 72-year-old grandparents who live in upstate New York, who have 3 kids and 9 grandkids and are healthy, but love sailing, what would they want us to ask them? What would be exciting for them to talk about? It gave really great ideas, right? And there's no shame in that game. It does, those ideas don't have to come from you in order for those topics to be really fruitful and rewarding once the conversation is underway. So that's number one, is using AI for topic prep. The other thing that's on my mind is in the context of my teaching, right? We're in a world now where large language models and AI chatbots are progressing very, very quickly and can simulate human conversation so much better than they could even a year ago or 2 years ago. Getting better at conversation is so much about practice. And there are many tools that already exist and are ever improving now, where we can practice in a very low stakes environment with an AI chatbot, where you can practice all kinds of hard conversational things and get feedback. And instead of having to practice it with other real humans, where you might actually hurt their feelings, or you might actually be boring to them, or you might not do the right things, and then it has real stakes. When you're chatting with an AI, the stakes are near zero. And so you can get a lot more reps, and it might be a really amazing pedagogical tool for conversation skills going forward.
Of course, you have to analyze the responses or the questions that it generates, because it may be totally out of context. And in fact, I did use a little AI to try to prep, and the only question I pulled from it was the question that I just gave you.
Ooh, today AI was a narcissist. It just wants to know about itself. That's so funny. And that's exactly right, right? Like it's a co-pilot. We're not going to just say, give me 10 questions and then ask those 10 questions. It's a co-creation of ideas. And so maybe it gives you 30 ideas and you use 2 of them, but those 2 might become the best topics of the whole conversation.
It, just to clarify, that wasn't the question it gave me. That's the question I pulled from it, because I really didn't care. I pretty much had 80, 90% of what I wanted to cover already, but every once in a while, it does give you something that, hey, you know what? I never really thought about that.
Exactly. That's true for topic prep broadly. Is it really doesn't reduce the quality of a topic because it didn't originate from your brain, right? I think that's why a lot of people listen to podcasts. It's why we read books. It's why we watch TV shows. Is like, yes, those things are enjoyable, but they also give us ideas about what to talk about with other people. And that's true for AI as well. And there's no shame in that it didn't come from you. You still need to have the curation talent to say, yes, this will be good to talk about, and the courage to actually bring it up when the time is right in a conversation with a real person.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, I mentioned earlier that my goal is to curate questions to amplify the words and the photos in the magazine. So our interviews are primarily a Q&A type. What I was wondering is, I don't want to take the spotlight off the guest. I also don't want to make it about me. What is one thing that I could do to perhaps create more of a conversational environment with the podcast?
That's such a great question, Greg. I think maybe one thing that you could do that goes against the mantra of strictly Q&A style podcasts is more personal follow-ups. So once you ask a root question like, hey, what are you thinking about around conversation and AI? And you let someone answer that for a while. And then you can ask a follow-up like, how is that affecting your life personally? Right? So just one step further and see what they say and then make sure to affirm their answer. I think just that one extra follow-up question, you're so good at sharing your personal stories, but you could also sort of tease that out of your guests as well if they're not just giving it to you right away. And that's what makes conversations feel conversational, is this sort of joint hunt for mutual sharing of stories and experiences. And all it takes often is like one follow-up question, like, how does that make you feel? Or, oh, have you ever used AI to do something hard? Or, you know, tell me about, what are you thinking about technology and conversation with your kids, right? So these sort of pointed follow-ups that will draw out personal stories from our conversation partners.
They sound like some of those follow-up questions can often be emotional type questions.
Absolutely. That's where all of the good life and all of the good juice really lives, is getting access to people's joy, their excitement, chasing that positive energy, but also unlocking their shame or their fears. And if you can get to a place with someone where they feel comfortable sharing their emotions, both positive and negative, you've won.
You know, speaking of fears, I have to admit, after hundreds of interviews and almost 20 years in podcasting, I had a little moment of imposter syndrome preparing for this episode. I do take a lot of pride. I try to put a lot of care, making sure I have the right questions to bring out the best in my guest and to make sure that I provide a great listen to the audience. But I have to admit, there's a few times I second-guessed myself. So I'm curious, Allison, how did I do today? And is there any question perhaps I could have reframed or what have you?
Thank you so much for sharing that with me. Your fleeting moments of imposter syndrome are such a gift to me. They mean that you really care and that you admire my work. And that means so much to me. And I also thank you for being confident enough to share that with me. What could you do better? And oh my God, you're so warm and such a great listener. And I think if you were to ask that question to every single person that you talk to in your life, you'll probably get a different answer from every person that you talk to. I think, and this isn't specific to you, Greg, but my brain is so zippy and so in the legion of middle-aged people recently diagnosed with ADHD. And so what I've realized is I really like zipping along in conversation very quickly and moving across topics really, really fast. What I love about talking to people like you is that you slow me down. It's very calming and soothing and reflective, but I also find myself getting impatient with myself and with the conversation. That's my only constructive feedback, but I think that's very unique to me. It's not a you problem.
No, that's great. And it makes me think, as you mentioned in your book, is to read the room, or in this particular case, try to gauge, maybe mirror the guest a little more.
Oh, yes, exactly. And I'm sure you do. I think we all do that. That scientists call it entrainment or accommodation, where every time you're in a conversation, both people are probably accommodating or sort of mirroring each other to some extent. Right now, scientists are trying to figure out, are there people who do that more easily and more quickly? Like, are they moving more towards their partners more of the time in their speed and in their habits and the timbre of their voice? And is that good? Is that a good thing? Does that make them better at conversation? And I think, I'm sure you already, it's one of those things that you can sense as soon as you're talking to somebody. What is their preferred pace? What's their preferred pace, speed of speech? What's their preferred pace of topic switching? What's their preferred pace of storytelling? And that's our job, is to figure it out, what our partners most enjoy.
I do try to gauge the guests, but what I'm thinking now is it's something that perhaps I need to keep doing throughout the conversation because perhaps the moment, the mood, something's changed.
I also just think I'm weird, Greg. I'm like a lightning fast moving from one thing to the next. You've now had the like most extreme version, hopefully, of this preference.
This has been awesome. And of course, as a Toastmaster, I do appreciate the feedback, even though perhaps maybe 300,000 people might be listening to this, but that's okay. But speaking of Toastmasters, this topic is very relevant because in Toastmasters, and at every Toastmasters meeting, there's a section called Table Topics, of course, which is impromptu speaking. And the Table Topics Master is the individual who curates, who asks the question. So I'm wondering, as perhaps one of our tail-off questions is, could you offer a piece of advice to someone who perhaps might be the Table Topics Master for the first time?
Oh, amazing. There are, at the end of my book, there are over 100 topic questions. They're drawn from that famous Arthur Aaron 36 questions to fall in love. They're drawn from some of the research that I've done on question asking. And this sort of ties back to what we talked about earlier, which is sometimes the opening question doesn't matter nearly as much as where the conversation goes after that. We do know that on average, questions that ask, that sort of probe other people's interests and things that they're excited about go really well because they're easy to talk about. So things like, have you been watching any TV shows recently? What's the best book that you've read in the last year? What hobbies are you excited about? What's your favorite hobby? So positive questions that anyone could answer that are not so broad that you're sort of swimming in it, but are a little bit more concrete work really well. One of my favorite go-to opening questions is just, what are you excited about these days? Everyone can answer that, and their answers tend to be so revealing of what's going on in their life and what they're feeling motivated and focused on right then. You can get more creative. So my co-author, Mike Yeomans, likes what he calls off-diagonal questions. These are things like, what are you good at, but you don't like doing? What are you bad at that you love doing? And I think those can be really fun. They're a little harder to answer, but there's more creativity in them. But again, my sort of fallback always question opener is, what are you excited about lately? And I think it's a great place to start the treasure hunt of conversation.
That's fantastic. I find the concept of questions just so fascinating. That's perhaps maybe the reason why I like watching Jeopardy, where you get the answer first and you have to come up with the question.
Isn't it so clever? I love Jeopardy too. We're obsessed. We do family competitions, and I've always thought the format was so great.
And folks, if you find the concept of questions fascinating, I encourage you to share this episode with your friends and family and fellow Toastmasters. You can find the Toastmasters podcast at toastmasterspodcast.com, toastmasters.org, Apple, Spotify, and anywhere you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out Allison's book, Talk, The Science of Conversation and the Art of Being Ourselves. And also watch for Allison's article coming up, and we'll also be adding that to the show notes once it's published. Before we leave, Allison, can you please share with our audience how people can get in touch with you, find your book, etc.?
Absolutely. You can buy my book, Talk, The Science of Conversation and the Art of Being Ourselves, everywhere you buy books. It's available in hard copy or an audiobook where you can listen to this voice narrating the book. Visit my website, allisonwoodbrooks.com, to download a Talk workbook if you want Talk conversation exercises to do with your friends, family, or coworkers. And follow me on Instagram, Prof. Allison Brooks, or on LinkedIn. I'd love to hear from you. And I send all of my best wishes to you and on your mission to ask more and better questions.
Allison Wood Brooks, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. And it has been an absolute pleasure. I look forward to the next question.
You're absolutely awesome. Thank you so much for having me.